Now, the Sunday Times has named John Preston's latest book the best biography yet of the media magnate Robert Maxwell. Well, I'm delighted that John joins us to talk to us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, I've been reading a lot about him. I find him a fascinating character. His death was shrouded in mystery, which amazingly is back in 91, but his life was as well. I mean, can I just take some examples and ask you some questions about him?
Yeah, of course.
Well, the first thing, going back to when he was born, back in 1923, I've got, was he born as Jan or Jan, or was he born as Ludwig?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, one of the weird things about Maxwell is he never quite knew who he was. And he thought he'd been given the name Jan. In fact, it turns out towards the end of his life, he found out that he was wrong. He'd been given the name Ludwig. But he then went on to change his name four times by the time he was 23. So it's not altogether surprising that he rather lost track what his real name was.
It's very confusing. He was born to a large Jewish family in Czechoslovakia. That's correct, isn't it?
Yep. In a really dirt poor village.
Oh, really? That's Solotvino. Solotvino?
Solotvino was a sort of tiny little scrubby place in the west of then Czechoslovakia, which happened to have a large Jewish population. And Maxwell was Jewish, and he was one of seven children. He left the Solotvino when he was 15 or 16, went off to try and find his fortune. And three of his siblings, both his parents and his grandfather, all died in Auschwitz.
Wow.
And that's kind of the prism that you have to see Maxwell's life through.
Yes, yeah, that's tough for anyone. I've got as well that he walked, again, I don't know if this is true, 275 miles to Budapest, but then he was captured and imprisoned as a spy.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly was captured and imprisoned as a spy. What's quite tricky with Maxwell is trying to disentangle myth from reality, and it's complicated because Maxwell himself wildly exaggerated stories that had happened to him. I suspect he didn't actually walk all the way to Budapest.
It's a long way.
He probably caught the train and his parents had bought him a ticket. But yes, you're absolutely right. He was imprisoned as a spy and sentenced to be executed.
Blimey, crikey. And he did obviously fight in World War II. And is it true he was decorated with the Military Cross for his heroism?
Yeah, absolutely he was. And, you know, he was presented to him by Field Marshal Montgomery. A Military Cross is only one down from the Victoria Cross. So
yeah.
You have to, you know, you don't get it for anything other than an act of, you know, conspicuous, and in his case, possibly suicidal gallantry.
Yeah, hard to imagine that the man he seemed to have turned out to be was a hero in a past life.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, you know, Maxwell's life was riven with all kinds of extraordinary contradictions. And, you know, it's very easy to mark him down as an ogre and a bad man and all the rest of it. And plainly he looted the Mirror pension funds, and that was a dreadful thing to do. But there was also another side to him, which was hardly saintly, but nonetheless kind of goes some way to balancing all the negative things that have been written about him.
Right. Okay. Well, before he went on to be this massive media mogul, he became a Labour MP, I believe.
Yeah, he was a Labour MP. I mean, typically Maxwell decided that he wanted to become Prime Minister. I better become an MP first. He always claimed to be a kind of lifelong socialist by conviction. In fact, I strongly suspect that he would have liked to have joined the Conservative Party, but he suspected, rightly as it turned out, that they would never have him because he was an outsider and, you know, he just wasn't one of them and an establishment figure.
So how did he go from there then, John, to owning his first publishing company?
Well, he basically, in the 1950s, he became the largest publisher of scientific journals in the world. And for years, Maxwell had dreamt as a young man of finding this commodity that would be in huge demand after the war that he could get for next to nothing. And he suddenly realized as he was sitting in Berlin in 1946 that there was this stock of enormous stock of scientific journals that hadn't been published during the war and that he could get for next to nothing. And essentially the commodity that he was after was knowledge. And none of the academics who'd written any of these journals really expected to be paid for them. Libraries were only too happy to pay for a contract that went on for years. So he was locked into this kind of cash cow. And he did, you know, one of the things about Maxwell, he unquestionably provided a platform for a lot of scientists to publicize their research and thereby paved the way for some very big discoveries in terms of physics and chemistry and biology.
So on paper, excuse the pun, on paper, it was a very successful business, but was it because of what you've just said, or was it his greed and corruption that meant that once he died, we found out that there were massive debts?
Well, no, I mean, actually in the 50s, I mean, he was always a kind of pretty reckless and rackety businessman to some extent, but actually it wasn't until his career went on, he became obsessed with owning a newspaper and for 30 years was engaged in this kind of titanic rivalry with Rupert Murdoch to become the world's greatest media mogul.
Yeah.
And it's when that really hurtles out of control that Maxwell's kind of morality hurtles out of control with it.
Yeah, it's hard really to compete with Rupert Murdoch, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the problem for Maxwell was that every round he fought with Murdoch, he lost, and he became more and more obsessed with Murdoch and more convinced that Murdoch was just hell-bent on doing him down. I don't think Murdoch was, but that's the way that Maxwell came to see it.
Yeah. Which brings us to his death. I can't believe it was 30 years ago, 91. Do you think he fell or did he jump or was he pushed?
Well, while it's true that there were plenty of people who would have been only too happy to have bumped off Maxwell if the chance arose, there's no convincing evidence that he was killed. He knew that the game was up. He died in the early hours of November the 5th, 1991. Later that morning, he was due to fly back to London, where he was effectively going to be facing the equivalent of three firing squads. He knew that the fraud squad was after him, the banks were after him, and the Mirror pensioners were after him. So if it was an accident, it was an amazingly fortuitous accident in a way. But
yeah,
there's no clear-cut evidence that he actually jumped. And my suspicion is that the line between suicide and an accident is more blurry than it's often reckoned to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, within months of his death, it became clear that pension funds had, it appears, been looted, banks defrauded, and £763 million was missing. That's a huge amount.
Yeah, it is an astonishing amount. And actually, it was sooner than that. I mean, it was basically when Maxwell died, all these world leaders queued up to pay tribute to him and said what an astonishing man he'd been.
Yeah, I remember.
And so on and so forth. And like literally three and a half weeks later, the same people were saying, no, no, he was a terrible scoundrel. So it was this huge about face when it became clear that there was this vast hole in the Mirror pension funds that Maxwell, he'd looted the pension funds basically to try and keep his empire afloat.
So how did that leave his sons, Kevin and Ian? Because did they take over? Were they sort of in conspiracy
with
him?
Yeah, they took over and they faced trial. I mean, one of the bizarre things is, of course, that, you know, Maxwell's youngest child, Ghislaine, is now in prison in New York awaiting trial. And there's a strange kind of connection between the trial of Kevin and Ian following Maxwell's death and the trial of Ghislaine, which is due to happen in July. In both cases, the main protagonist, as it were, won't be there, you know, because Maxwell himself was dead by the time that Kevin and Ian came to trial, and Epstein, of course, died, and therefore a lot of the attention has shifted to Ghislaine as a result.
Yeah, interestingly, I know there's a picture of the actual boat on the front of your book, and it was called the Lady Ghislaine, wasn't it? The boat that he went missing off. Yeah.
And it was actually, you know, Maxwell's favourite possession, about the only possession he really cared about.
Did he have a good relationship with her and with his sons?
Well, one of the things that happens to Maxwell in the last few years of his life is that he really does suffer from galloping megalomania, and he pushes everybody away. He treats his wife appallingly. He treats his children, all of them, including Ghislaine, who was unquestionably his favourite, pretty badly. And he ends up as this really lonely, isolated, vastly overweight figure who's kind of constantly reaching for this elusive something that he feels is going to make his life complete and give him a sense of fulfillment. And he never quite gets it.
Right. And didn't, am I right in thinking, two of his children died?
Yeah, there was a daughter who died when she was very, very young in the late 1950s. And then there was a son, the oldest son, Michael, who was the heir apparent to the empire. He was very badly injured in a car crash in the early 60s, the same week that Ghislaine was born. And he spent the next 7 years in a coma before he died. And it was at that point, really, Michael's death was when what had hitherto been, to some extent, a pretty happy family starts to fracture and fall apart.
Yeah, it sounds like it. There are some striking photos as well in your book. There is actually a photo of one of him receiving the Military Cross, and you mentioned his wife Betty. There's others showing them shortly after their wedding. Did she stay with him right through to the end?
Yes, she did. She was incredibly loyal and tried valiantly to keep the family together. But as I say, Maxwell had turned against her, and he would humiliate her in public and really be vile to her. And she could never understand why. And indeed, you know, to some extent, it's a mystery. She thought it was because Maxwell had always denied being Jewish, rediscovered his Judaism late in life, and she felt that he blamed her for not being Jewish. I'm a bit skeptical about that. There are other reasons why he turned against her. But yes, she was the kind of rock of the family.
Yeah. He did have affairs, though, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I mean, he wasn't a sort of galloping philanderer. He certainly had affairs. I mean, he was a kind of, in some respects, an old-fashioned romantic. And he fell very much in love with his PA at the Mirror, who was much, much younger than he was. And she eventually went off and married someone else. And that was another of the things that tipped Maxwell, use a terrible analogy, over the edge in the last few years of his life. And, you know, he just became more and more unhappy and desperate. And whenever one thinks of Maxwell, it's a terribly tragic story in a way.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same. From what I imagined of him, from what I've read in the past, after talking to you, it comes across as a very sad figure.
Yeah, in a way, it's the story of Maxwell's life is like a kind of terrible morality tale of someone for whom nothing was ever enough. You know, as I said, he's constantly reaching for something and never quite getting there. And yet, you know, by most people's standards, you know, he's achieved astounding things, but you felt that it never really gave him the satisfaction he'd hoped for.
Interesting. Well, there's a heck of a lot more in the book, which is called Fall, The Mystery of Robert Maxwell by John Preston, who we're speaking to now. It's just out this month. We're selling it, as always, on our website. John, I'm intrigued. Are you working on another book yet? Can we have you on the show again?
I am working, but for various reasons, I can't tell you about it at the moment. But I'd be very happy to talk to you about it when I can.
Wonderful. Look forward to that. Thanks for being on the show, John.
Many thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.